You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
It's one thing I've learned, I never want my dick out around a crocodile.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, former zookeeper and animal handler, Jacob Kaye. And now your host. He's never officially wrangled any animals, but he has fought off a few cougars in his day, Deese Casillas.
Mullab Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming back, guys. We appreciate you hanging in there. Doing my best, as I said, in 2024 to get this show back on the weekly track for you. We've done pretty good. We've had a couple weeks off, but I've been busy, as everyone knows. The schedule has been crazy, but we appreciate you hanging in there and keep coming back. So if you like what you hear, as usual, tell a friend, let them know. Rate us, review us on iTunes, Spotify, Yellow Book, Grindr, whatever you use, we'll take it. Give us a shout out. We love to hear what you guys hear from our listeners. It's good to chat with you guys. As for me, guys, as usual, go to deesecomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network, live shows going on across the country. I will be at Upstage Comedy Lounge this Saturday night. So check that out. That's a 10 p.m. show, I believe. Go to their calendar. I don't know. I'll be there. So come check it out. And then next weekend, November 2nd, I will be at Mexamericon in Austin, Texas, slanging the new comic book Kill Stan. So big shout out to everyone who came out to the Dallas Fan Fest last weekend. That was a lot of fun. We sold a ton of books. So we're pushing that. And reviews are rolling in and people are happy. So follow us on inferno.earth for more updates on that, on Instagram, the website, etc. And number two is in the works. I've been getting some preliminary art back this last week, and oh boy, we are excited to get this bad boy out to you. It's going to be rolling out. Hopefully, we're looking at like around March for that second issue. So keep an eye out. But and you can still, if you didn't support the Kickstarter and you're not in Texas, where you can come get a physical copy from me at a convention, hit me up on Instagram, Facebook, anything like that, and I can ship copies to you. We've got some hard copies of the main cover, none of the exclusive stuff from Kickstarter, but we do have the main cover that we can get you for about $15 shipped. So hit me up and we'll get you a copy. So all right, that's it, guys. That's it for the announcements. You guys know where everything is, what to do. So we are going to get into it with our guest today. He comes to us from, I believe he's in Houston, Texas. He may correct me. He has done a million things. Comedian, magician, worked on reality shows, a zookeeper, animal handler, all kinds of stuff. Please welcome to the show, Jacob Kaye. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me, Deese. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. Are you in Houston? Is that right?
I'm all over the place. Sometimes I could be found in Washington State or Los Angeles or Africa. Okay. Right now, I just got back in town a few days ago, and I'm here in my home in Midtown, Houston, Texas.
You live in Houston. Are you born and raised out there?
Yeah, actually, I was born and raised in why did I say Alvin? Edit that. I grew up in Pearland.
Okay.
Back in the 80s when I would say 75% of it was country.
Yeah. It's Pearland is a funny little place. I like it. I've done some shows at some breweries out there. And they were very, very adamant that, it's Pearland. It's not Pearland.
Sometimes if I want to be pretentious, I'll say Pearland, but yes, it's Pearland.
Yeah, I feel like they should accept the upgrade, you know? I'm trying to give them a bump.
That's the new Pearland on the 288 sign. That's Pearland.
Okay, that's split. The gentrification of Pearland and Pearland. I'm like, man, I'm trying to do you a favor here. It's called, you know, pearls. I mean, not that nothing wrong with a pear. That is arguably the best fruit. You know, they don't call it the king's apple for nothing. But yeah, I think a pear, you know, pearl might be better than a pear.
Pears are pretty good. Actually, I had a pear the other day and just reminded myself that we should popularize pears and stick them in baskets with apples and oranges because they're delicious.
They're far superior to an apple.
They're just not eaten enough.
I have probably 5 a week.
I love that.
I am a big pear fan. And I don't know if you ever tried, have you ever had an Asian pear?
I've not. But I found, whenever I was living in Washington State, I just ate about every type of apple I could.
Oh, yeah.
And Honeycrisp, can't go wrong. Love it.
Yeah, good Honeycrisp from Wenatchee, Washington, out there. That's that is a good apple. You gotta go for the try the Asian pears, and then there's this one. It's called like a water pear. It looks more like an apple. It's shaped more like an apple, but oh boy, that's a good one too.
I'm writing this down. Yeah. Next time we meet, I will have a review.
They're good. They're good. They're very, very good. Apples or pears are one of those things where, like, at its best, when you get like when a pear is at its best, it is arguably the best fruit, in my opinion.
I like oranges and avos. Those are my two faves.
Oranges and what? Oh, oranges and avocados. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, no. That's I'm not gonna argue about avocados or oranges. I will say this: an avocado is a great food, but I don't find myself I don't take an avocado on the road for a snack. Like just an avocado.
Oh, we're talking about road snacks?
An algorithm, you know, you need a pear on its own, like just on its own. An avocado on its own doesn't stand very well on anything.
Absolutely.
Else. It,
you know,
cranks
like
it up
you
to
have
10.
To put salt on it or sauce or whatnot. With the pear, you can just eat it as is. You can eat right through the skin. It's just a beautiful little specimen.
Yeah. It's perfect. You know, that's the beauty of a good fruit.
And it's clean. It's clean whenever you crunch into it. It's not like an orange where it just juices everywhere.
They
contain themselves well.
Yeah.
So props to pears.
I had some friends in Western Montana, and one time my buddy's wife, you know, I loved avocados. I grew up in Southern California. My grandma had an avocado tree in the backyard, and you know, big Latino family. We ate a lot of avocados. And then my buddy's wife, she's like, "Oh, you got to try it like this." And she's cutting them open and putting mayonnaise on him and eating them like that. And I'm like, "Oh, I'm like, tell me you're white without telling me you're white, lady. This is the worst thing. You like, I don't know if I could hate an avocado, but you have made this an abomination. You know."
I mean, like, I love, like, in Africa, living over there, all you need is a pocket knife. If you got a pocket knife and just look for, you know, a fallen avocado to use as a way to knock down a fresh avocado of a tree.
Yeah.
They're plentiful out there.
Yeah.
And they're just the best. I love a good avo.
As far as like a survival food, it's a great one because it's got more fats and nutrients than like a pear is going to give you a great little fructose burst. You know, you got that nice, some vitamins, some fiber, but not those good fats that an avocado is going to give you.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'll be in Africa for about 2 to 3 months, and being vegan, I will strictly eat probably 80% avos. And the cool thing about these avos is that they are as large as two of my fists together, and you can get a bushel of like 15 of them for about $3.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, so you can't go wrong. Unfortunately, no pears.
Yeah, Trader Joe's, you're getting like one mini avocado for $4.
Yeah, well, Africa, you get the steal, you get the bargain over there.
Yeah, yeah, the economy's a little different, and you know, dollar goes a long way over there.
Yeah, it's like they grow on trees over there or something.
Yeah, now you're talking witchcraft. That's growing on trees. We all know it grows in Bill Gates's underground bunker. That's where avocados and food grows. Doesn't grow on trees. That's nuts. You sound like a Christian now. So, Jacobs, you've done a lot of things. Where we want to talk to you today about specifically your experience with animal handling, zookeeping, kind of the zookeeper thing. I had this idea, like, I want to talk to someone who's worked at a zoo, because I love hate zoos. I love them because I love animals, and I also hate them because I love animals.
I completely understand both of those sentiments, and we can get deep into that because I do have reserved words for both of those sentences.
So,
I love that you said that.
Yeah, I'm so torn because, you know, I want to look at animals, I want to adore them, but also I feel like, you know, more often than not, and I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like so, especially like certain animals in a zoo is, you should be criminal. I mean, it's like, especially when you're talking about the more mammals, you know, like monkeys and elephants and, you know, primates, even a lot of bears and things like that, things with more of a prefrontal cortex and penchant, you know, like emotional capabilities. These they're just not meant. It's like a weird prison for them, and it's sad.
So so about that, I get that a lot. A lot of people, that's pretty much their first argument, as you just made. So a lot of these animals, you know, just for instance, the Houston Zoo, the two grizzly bears were, you know, the enclosure, you know, could be better. But those two bears came from a bad pet owner.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you got to figure out where what's the best agency for these animals to go to. And Houston Zoo came to be a great facility to house these animals that can no longer be taken back to the wild, and
right,
for sure as hell not going to be just transferred over to one pet owner to another.
Yeah.
And at least at the Houston Zoo, they could live out their life being a bear, getting the full enrichment that a bear or any animal could possibly have.
I mean, you know, there is that, like, the part where, hey, this animal is injured and can't survive on its own in the wild, or you know, yeah, pet owner doesn't have the instincts to go back in the wild. We can either cull this animal, or we can put it in a zoo and it can live out a life fat and, you know, just.
And, you know, and I guess for one good thing that they're at the zoo is because they do become ambassadors for their species, and they are given, you know, they're giving their species, you know, like a second chance, such as, you know, like Fiona. She was an anteater at the Houston Zoo who was also that came from a pet owner. If I recall correctly, I believe that the pet owner was trying to feed it chicken, you know, and as you know, anteaters do not eat chicken.
Man, I've seen the beak on an anteater. I'm going to guess that guy was trying to feed it more than chicken.
this fucking creep with an anteater. That's, he's like, listen, I've had a couple sea breezes tonight and I'm feeling lonely. What's going on with that, with that long beak of yours? It's like a, it's like a, it's like a mobile fleshlight. This anteater. What, who has an ant? That's the weirdest. That might be one of the weirdest mammals you could have as a pet.
Yeah, they're wonderful. Anything from the Xenarthran order are my favorite animals, and I guess that's probably how I got into the pangolin. Which is not a Xenarthran, it's a Philodota. It belongs to the Philodota order. But yeah, just anything that eats insects that are quadrupeds, those little actually pangolins are bipedal, but yeah, they're just crazy little creatures. And I just love the anatomy of their stomachs and just how they ingest the insects with those elongated tongues. They're beautiful. I think they're fantastic.
So what's the craziest thing you've seen at a zoo with an animal? Let's go craziest animal, not involving a human, craziest interaction with an animal you've seen, something an animal do to another animal or to itself or yeah.
Ask me a human involvement. I have a good answer for that one. One that just has with animals. I was in, what zoo was that? It was in Chicago. It was the Lincoln Park Zoo. And I saw a, maybe it was a, yeah, it was a gibbon. It was a gibbon in an enclosure on the inside, you know, because they do have access to go out, but this one was inside, and it was like, man, if you think Simone Biles is amazing as a gymnast, you got to see these gibbons. This gibbon had one arm, and it was doing things that I couldn't even fathom. Like, it was just brilliant just to see the sheer gymnastics and talent and timing in this creature. And while you could look at the animal and say, you know, maybe enrichment could be improved, you know, this, I'm not sure, I don't know the animal, so I can't say that it's got lack of stimulant and it was just going nuts, but this gibbon was going nuts with one with one arm. And it was flying back and forth for like 2 straight minutes. And I've been so impressed over the gymnastics of any animal in our kingdom. It was, it just collected an audience. And I felt like I owed it a peanut because it definitely got my attention.
Yeah, those bad boys are athletes like crazy. It's you know, you can't even, until you see it in person, you don't even realize, you know, it's amazing to the things they can do. So let's go person, involving another person. What's the craziest thing you've witnessed?
So I used to work at a zoo off of Beltway 8, right near the Bush Intercontinental Airport.
Okay.
And the zoo is called, what was that zoo called? The name is so goddamn stupid that I'm always forgetting the title of the zoo. It was Interactive Aquarium and Animal Preserve. It's just too long. It's just like a broken sentence. Okay. And not only that, but they also take the name of the downtown aquarium. And so that gets a lot of confusion whenever I was working there, like asking if we're related. It's just a horrible name, horrible marketing. But on my first day there as a zookeeper, I was exiting the porcupine enclosure and I see one of the hoofstock crew keepers walking a, I would say it's quite young, camel. And he had it on a rope, like on a leash, and he was walking this large camel that's way taller than any human, and it was bucking. That thing went goddamn crazy. And, you know, even though I've never seen Star Wars, I think I know the reference here. What is that large thing that Han Solo tried to wrangle?
You're not gonna catch me up in this nerd propaganda. Like I
saw your comic books. I saw your comic books.
No, it's called a Bantha. No. It's called a Tauntaun.
Tauntaun. Okay, yes, yeah, a Tauntaun. Okay, remember how he was kind of like trying to train it and get it on the ropes? It was like,
yeah.
That camel, with people trying to like pet the camel, take photos of the camel, this camel was going nuts. And on my first day, this is what I'm looking at. And I really wanted to film it because then this is when I realized, oh shit. Yeah, I get it. I'm at a roadside zoo, but this zoo is completely unqualified, lack of experience, and was full of just exploitation. And I was looking at it on my first day. I'm surprised that this camel didn't injure any guests as children were standing by being unattended by parents. You know, like, who would have expected that? You know, you let your kids run around. It's a zoo. It's safe. But when this camel came through, bucking up on its hind legs, and I questioned the keeper later. I was like, hey, you know, like, what was going on with that? And I couldn't seem like I was investigating into the situation, but I was just like, hey, what happened there? He said that it was over bottle fed.
What was the bottle? Whiskey?
Jesus. Yeah. What? Right. Yeah. It just struck a strong chord in my body, and I'm like, oh, this. I gotta step it up here. This is not a zoo that cares about the environmental welfare of these specimens. And then that's whenever I looked at the zoo with a wider lens. And yeah, their environmental enrichment was just horrible. Yeah. But yeah, that camel was just, I still think about that quite often and how scary it was. They try to calm it down, and they also try to calm the situation down, playing it off like it's no good, big deal. We have it under control. I'm like, the Houston Zoo would never bring out a camel like that into the audience.
Yeah, just like.
You guys just endangered 20 to 30 people just for this bullshit stunt so you could walk a camel around your facility and have people pet it. Thank God that no one was actually petting it when that happened, because there could have been some injured people. And that zoo has – oh, yeah, here's another situation for animal interaction. That same zoo – one of the green eels sliced someone's hand, a child's hand. Blood was everywhere. And whenever I looked into that, someone said that a Paku fish amputated a finger and swallowed it, and it was never returned.
that's crazy.
I didn't see it. It's just something that's been told to me several times by several people. So therefore, I'm like, okay, this must be a fact.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and these fish don't they have very unforgiving teeth. So why that facility is a petting zoo is beyond me. Like, whenever my brother and his two children came, they're trying to pet the animals, and I told Jory, I was like, listen to me closely. Get your fucking kids. Stay as close as possible. Don't let them touch these animals.
Yeah, well, I feel like anyone, you know, like pygmy goat is great for a petting zoo, but, you know, moray eel, maybe not in the top,
sure.
I don't know, maybe not top 10 animals I'd put in a petting zoo, maybe top 20. But top, you know, like, but I mean, if you're letting your kid, this just sounds like a sting operation for CPS.
Like, they're like, if people bring their kids here, we immediately just take the kids. These are not fit 100%. Parents. These are not That's people funny. Who should be rearing children in any shape or form. They're definitely from the Pearland side. They're not from Pearl, you know. They're not on the Pearland. That's for sure.
Yeah, the place was called Houston Interactive Aquariums and Animal Preserve.
Yeah, I mean, be fair. Getting your finger bitten off by a fish is pretty interactive. They do 100%.
They definitely got their money's worth on that.
Yeah.
I never heard anything of it in the news. So I'm not sure if it was like they signed an NDA and they paid them off, but they've definitely had their interaction with the law as well as the media with ton of negative feedback that have involved poaching animals from the wild and going to prison. Yeah, they're the convicts over there. They're poachers.
Damn. Well,
those animals, some of those animals have been caught from the wild.
Okay, real quickly, I need to circle back. And
we can talk about pears again?
No, we're not going to go that far back. But I do, we're going to go back to a galaxy far, far away. Sure. Because I need to ask how, as someone who was born in the 80s, which I think you said, you have never seen Star Wars. Were you Mormon? What happened?
Growing up in Pearland off of Dixie Farm Road, we had farms and we had trees and woods. We had creeks.
Did you have power? You know,
I'd go in my backyard. I would see possums, skunks, raccoons. There's water moccasins. There's copperheads. I lived near a canal. Mm-hmm. So we had turtles. We had frogs. And then we also had, we were adrenaline junkies, all three of us, my two brothers. And so we had ramps in the mm-hmm. backyard, and all we did was just skate and ride our bikes and catch animals. And so I really had no time for science fiction as a kid. You know, I was just trying to figure out science. What did I want to do with animal conservation, you know, at a young age? Like, my first word was bird. So it goes that far back of, you know, what animal conservation means to me. And I just never really got into Star Wars or Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings. You know, I was more into watching, like, E.T., you know, like E.T. was my science fiction film. It's about a young boy who discovers not only a new species, but a new life form. And
yeah, I mean, you know, I've seen E.T.
to me. And just that was my first movie I ever saw in the movie theater, and just seeing this little boy and his siblings, you know, take care of this new life form and fed it, you know, and the husbandry was there, you know, they killed it without having any actual experience. And, you know, they got this little animal and they brought it back home. And I just thought that was the most beautiful thing. And while that could have been a great introduction into space, to Star Wars, but it was a great introduction for animals for me.
Okay, I gotta ask you. I gotta ask you a question then. Have you ever seen any movie by Diablo Cody?
I love Diablo Cody.
Okay, if you've seen her movies and never seen Star Wars, your cinema's backwards, my friend. That's all I'm saying. we need to get you on the right track here. I understand there's animals, but my God, if you got time for Diablo Cody, you might. Just watch anything. It's fine.
I would consider myself a movie buff. Like, one of my favorite movies, you know, as you mentioned with Diablo Cody, is Young Adult. Anytime I see that flipping through the channels, I'll stop and watch it. I'm just absolutely in love with Charlize Theron. I think she's a fantastic, brilliant actor. And even what she did with the what's that goddamn movie where they're in the sands hanging out?
Oh, the Mad Max one?
Yeah, Mad Max, Fury. Yeah, I just think she's brilliant in that film, you know? Like, she ain't no damsel in distress. She killed it. And, but yeah, anyway, I like Diablo Cody. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, I think I will, you know, maybe you should go back to running in ditches. Maybe that'll keep, well, there's more ditches to be seen. More snakes,
I mean,
to be had.
You called me about this podcast about animal handling, and yeah, it definitely does correlate back to ditches, where yeah, I learned how to pick up a snake, how I learned how to catch these fast moving critters, how, like, at a young age, like, how did you catch that possum or that skunk or any animal that could bite me? And yeah, it definitely goes back to Pearland.
How many times have you had a rabies vaccination?
Once, 2014, I was getting ready to go to Africa, and I just wanted to get all of my my vaccines ready, and I just wanted to make sure that if I do get attacked by any animal out there, that I would be, you know, my body would be qualified to survive, potentially.
Yeah.
But when I was out there, I actually didn't catch a lot of mammals. It was more of reptiles. Yeah, I got a little crocodile. What else have I caught out there? Close run in with a spring hoss, which was all over our area where we were sleeping, which is a small bipedal animal that looks like a tiny kangaroo.
You've been around a ton of animals, from sea to shining sea to land, etc.
Which... I've swam with great sharks. I've worked with penguins. I give pangolins walks whenever they're in their rehabilitation process to be released out into the wild, which the animals have been captured by poachers and to be sold or killed. And so we go and rescue them and rehabilitate. Yeah, I've worked with many venomous snakes, and which is great training for whenever you're hanging out with your friends hiking and there's like a venomous snake in the middle of the trailhead and there's poison ivy everywhere. And so I'm like, well, here, I'll pick it up and I'll relocate it for you guys so we could safely walk by.
Well,
that's happened many a times.
Oh yeah, down in the south, there's plenty of deadly snakes. So.
Yeah, and then my favorite, which you could YouTube, as I mentioned, you know, my history with Jackass. I swim across a small pond, racing a 13.5-foot alligator across the water, and thankfully I'm here. I made it. And all that damn thing needed to do was turn around, and it was halfway there. And but yeah, I love like more dangerous, the more I get a kick out of it. And I think, again, that correlates back to just being an adrenaline junkie. And, you know, I no longer, you know, being a stuntman, I think a lot of my body has just been and no longer use of that, but using my wits and knowing how to work an animal. It's basically like when you're holding a venomous snake, like a cobra, for instance, it's like holding a fire hose, and your only job is to not get wet.
Yeah, and not get wet. And by wet, I mean deadly venomous poison in your bloodstream.
Injected,
so more. What animal has the craziest sex?
Craziest sex? Oh, goddamn, slugs. Houston, Free Press Houston. I used to be a writer for that magazine or monthly newspaper. And on Valentine's Day, anytime there'd be a holiday, I would correlate it with our animal kingdom. And on Valentine's Day, I wrote an article about the top 10 wildest sex. And it was definitely the slug, because they can change their sex. They eat off each other's genitalia. And there's nothing more kinky than these little crazy hermaphrodites. They're wild.
The what's the craziest one that's a mammal?
A mammal? A little name drop here. My friend Sophia, she studies the Tibetan macaque.
Okay.
And she studies their animal behavior, and she told me that the alpha macaques, they will have public sex. They will go out in the middle of the area and they will just fuck each other's brains out and make wild sex sounds and just show everybody, like, look who I'm fucking. I'm fucking another alpha. No one wants to be a beta. And so they just put on a show, saying like it's a form of dominance,
like a P. Diddy party, huh?
Yeah, right. And everyone's invited. and so the beta macaques, they will quietly go copulate in the wild in secret, and even their sex sounds, you know, it's more of like whispers. They're being very
they're shameful. They're like the Jehovah's Witnesses of the macaques.
Yeah, they're very hush hush.
Yeah, lights off, and dick through the boxer hole, socks still on.
the socks. Yeah, definitely the socks.
Not like God intended.
Yeah, and whenever Sophia told me that, I was just like, that's just brilliant. I just thought that was cool. That just became immediately my new favorite animal sex fact.
You think the Planet of the Apes could ever happen? Think they could take over?
Planet of the Apes, could that ever happen?
Wait, hold on. Are you familiar with the Planet of the Apes? These are prerequisite. Yes. I guess I need to ask these questions now before.
I've seen Planet of the Apes with James Franco. Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay.
Get your damn hands off me, you dirty ape.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Isn't that the quote?
Yeah, that is. Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Yeah.
Little Charlton Heston.
I mean. No, I actually think, no, the answer is no. To be more pedantic with that question, we're destroying the planet. And if we destroy the planet, we're going to destroy ourselves, and we're going to destroy every other animal on this planet. So no, they're not going to be a Planet of the Apes.
You know, there's these, this troop of baboons in India, I think it is, that they've now seen that there was like stealing puppies. And they thought that they were eating the puppies. And what we realize now is they're actually training the puppies and raising them as watchdogs. They've actually trained them to alert the troop when there's people or other like danger coming. They're actually training dogs. They figured out how to train dogs as like watchdogs, like humans did.
That is insane.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So it's, I mean.
When was this identified?
Oh, in the last couple years, they've noticed this. They thought that they were just stealing puppies and killing them, eating them. But yeah, they found that they're raising them, and like they feed them enough to keep them around, and they train them to alert them when there's danger.
That's interesting. There is a symbiotic relationship with frogs and spiders. There is this one species of frog, I'm sorry, species of spider that will keep a frog as a pet.
Huh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't recall why, but it had something to do with feeding. What was it? Yeah, I can't recall, but I'm not sure if there's any, like, full, like academic papers on this behavior. I'd love to read it, but yeah, there are tarantulas that have pet frogs for their own well-being.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you start to look at primates, they've captured images of orangutans building essentially like fishing rods, you know, not like full fishing rods with reels.
Yeah,
and stuff,
no, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right, but yeah. Like to be able to fish and crude tools. So they really, they're starting to hypothesize that, you know, primates are in the Stone Age and essentially starting.
I was just about to say that. Yes. Yeah. Non-human primates are definitely in the Stone Age era, and which, you know, goes back to your question, will there ever be a Planet of the Apes? It's fascinating to think about that because these non-human primates are also producing sound. Mm-hmm. More vocalized like human. That was a new research that I just read just recently. Their cognitive thinking skills are just brilliant. I've got this book or this magazine. It was like a monthly magazine by the Cocos Foundation.
Yeah.
And in the back of I had a meeting with them in San Francisco a few years ago, and they gave me a stack of Cocos magazines, and on the back of the magazine had interesting conversations that the gorillas have had with each other or with the keepers. And Michael was one of the gorillas, and they asked if Michael would like some chocolate. And Michael, you know, uses ACL, you know, American Sign Language, mm-hmm. and he said with his hands, drool. And I just thought that was so fascinating that, you know, not only that they have the capability of saying, yes, I do want that, you know, just like, you know, whenever you present a treat with your dog, but he also described his feelings towards the chocolate by like, oh, yes. And I'm just like, wow, that is just so cool.
Yeah, it is interesting to think about. I mean, the timeline is probably too long as far as evolutionarily to, you know, I think there'll be too big of a catastrophic event before apes could really.
That catastrophic event is the sixth extinction, where we will be putting all these animals to extinct. I'm walking over here to my library. I've got this one book. Shoot, I thought I organized all these books. I can't recall who wrote the book, but it's called The Sixth Extinction. I hope I didn't let someone borrow it because I don't see it. Anyways, but yeah, it's called The Sixth Extinction. I definitely recommend anyone to read it. And yeah, that's going to be our next catastrophic event where all these, you know, like every day these animals are going extinct. So yeah, I doubt these monkeys will be learning to talk anytime soon.
Yeah, well, I think yeah, I mean, more likely we probably extinct the planet in a more catastrophic way, I think, is the trajectory we're on.
Yeah, and I know, like, whenever I talk about animal conservation or just speaking with UDs, is that, you know, like, animal conservation is not a happy, fun career to have. It's actually quite dismal. And while I was working at that roadside zoo, that animal preserve with the camel, I was even told to tone down my lectures whenever we would do like a zoo talk. You know, like, while they were telling you know, the guest these very like simplistic animal facts, like a kangaroo can jump over 20 feet, you know, I'm like over here, like, yeah, the embryonic diapause, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, and I would talk about their conservation efforts and just get like science with it. You know, I'm not going to dumb down our guests. And I would talk about the nature of extinction and how these animals are being poached and what they're being poached for. And they're just like, hey, can you tone that down and not talk about that stuff? I'm like, I will not. This is my job. I'm going to educate these people to be well informed. So whenever they walk out of here, you know, they can learn something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it is bleak, but, you know, we just,
I mean, go to the, any other zoo or AZA accredited zoo. And they will definitely, you know, some of the conversations are bleak. Yeah. You can throw in the fun facts, but, you gotta talk about the bleak topics.
Yeah.
And you know, as I mentioned, AZA, which is Association of Zoos and Aquariums, look for that label, look for that logo, look for that sticker, that stamp of approval, because those are the zoos that are going to give you the full education on the animals in the zoos, why they're in the zoos, and, you know, also with their the SSP, their species survival plan, and how they're going to breed these animals and help put these back out into the wild. Because, you know, for those who, you know, want to talk shit on zoos, these breeding initiatives will help keep these animals out of the zoos. And unfortunately, with these animals, if you look at these animals and see where they're from, you're like, oh, that's where poverty is from. Of course they're killing these animals. So yeah, if you want to fix the animals, you got to fix the poverty. And if you want to fix the poverty, then you really got to look at this at a human side and realize what is going on with these people and why are they poaching.
Yeah.
And if I may, this is probably a good time to shamelessly self-promote. I'm working on a movie where it's more of like an anthropology piece on rhino poachers, where I go and live with rhino poachers, and I don't expose them. They're wearing masks. You know, I don't want to know their names or their faces on camera, but they give me the details of why they are doing this. And it all goes down to, my man, I can't read, I can't write. What else am I going to do? There's no job opportunity. Yeah, it's just, it's really sad whenever you're in Africa and you see like a little boy selling fish on the side of the road just to help make ends meet to feed the family. But yeah, if you want to help animals, go help out those poverty villages. And I feel like that's when we'll truly make and see a difference in animal conservation.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you know, monetization of anything is the problem with everything, right?
Oh, 100%.
You know, if there's a way to monetize it and there's a demand, then people will find a market for it. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
But, well, in the inverse of your love of animals, I got to ask, if you had, what is your least favorite animal, your mortal enemy as an animal?
My least favorite animal is probably the cat.
Just a regular old house cat?
Oh, yeah.
What about a house cat?
I love the cat. The cats are great, but their behavior of what they do is just such a environmental disaster.
I'm going to need you to come over here and talk to my girlfriend in person and tell her that so we can get rid of this cat we have.
I mean, I hate saying this, like, but I feel that feral cats should be put down. There are billions of cats on this planet and only so many local wildlife. And whenever you get your goddamn local feral cat that are killing over 2 billion birds a year, you know, they're disrupting the ecosystem all over the world because these birds are, you know, they're migratory animals. They come from Canada. They're going to Mexico. So you're disrupting everything in between because, you know, these birds are beautiful seed dispersals. You know, whenever they release their droppings, they're putting seeds, they're planting forests, they're planting meadows and fields for the other animals to flourish. And so, yeah, the cats.
First of all, these cats are, or these birds are crossing two borders illegally. That we need to stop that first. All right. I think we need to just have more cats, you know, with ice. I think that's how we can stop this border problem, right? We just get all the, you know, feral cats, you know, line them up down at the southern border. And then all of a sudden, nothing gets across, right? Feral cats, so they kill, it is crazy how many, like birds and animals, small animals that cats kill per year. The number is staggering.
Mice. I mean, I was working on a TV show a few weeks ago, and the host of the show, we were at their house, and their pet cat just comes in with this mouse, and the mouse was dragging its back legs. It paralyzed it, and you know, there are children around. I wanted to kill the dang thing, but you know, I'm working on set and I had to be, you know, professional. And I'm like, God dang it. Looking at the cat, I'm like, just do your job. Just kill the damn thing. Hurry up and just go away. Get out of here. I absolutely despise cats. I love them, but I hate their behavior.
All right. What is your favorite animal?
Number one. Come on, man. How many times have you heard me say pangolin?
Oh, pangolin is it, huh? So you and... All right, so it's your fault for COVID.
It is my fault.
if we're still sticking with that story.
And it's funny because here in America, you know, I hear, you know, oh, so pangolins are the one to cause... but, you know, whenever I'm with the African Pangolin Working Group over in Johannesburg, they just roll their eyes at that statement. So, that's not my field of study. You know, my study with pangolins is the illegal, trafficking and the poaching. And, I do, data analytics on, the animals that are, being sold in the markets. So that's my study, but, I'm not sure if pangolins actually have caused COVID. I don't think that's even a fact. I think that's just more of a speculation.
Well, I think that's even not even speculation anymore. I think we've all gotten past that ruse of COVID after all these years. So pangolin. There's a pangolin and a person hanging on the side of a cliff. Random pangolin, random person. You don't know either one. You can only save one. Who do you save?
Shit. Honestly, probably the pangolin.
Okay.
There's billions of us. These animals are dying due to human encroachment. We poach them. We eat them. And I say we as in humans, the scales are made out of keratin, which is our hair and nails, mm-hmm. and they believe that it can cause or it can cure cancer, it can cure asthma, arthritis, stomach ulcers. Basically, the pangolin is the perfect one-size-fits-all T-shirt for curing all illnesses.
Who believes that?
But what is perfect about this animal is that it's a mammal that lacks fur or hair, which means that evolution has not touched it. You know, what you're looking at is a living dinosaur. These things lived 80 million years ago. What you're looking at, it is not changed too much in size, shape, and you're looking at a living dinosaur. And it's, to me, that's the perfect animal. So yeah, because of their conservation status and where they're at in life, I mean, I would probably have to go with the it's always animals first. Animals, women, children. Fuck guys.
So, well, we do need guys to continue the species, unfortunately. They're a vital part of civilization, unfortunately.
I'm not saying kill all of them, but, you know, I choose animals.
Okay, I'm with you. I am animal over person. I would probably stand with you too, besides maybe a handful of people. So you mentioned pangolins, people think they're the perfect cure-all for everything. Who, when you say that, do you mean people over in just who are poaching them? Do you mean actual men of science? What do you
So I'm not going to give detail on the location of where I do the research, but when I go there, you know, and I'll show you the photos. It's like a flea market and all these vendors, and I do inventory on the pangolins, like how many are being sold, how much are they being sold for, and how fast are they being sold. Sometimes I'll go there like two times or three times a month, and I will go and see how much of that pangolin has been cut off for human use. I'll look in the dish, you know, with scales where you can just go in and pick up a couple scales out of this dish, like gumballs in a jar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll take a photo of it and try to analyze like how many have been sold. And then after that, that's when the next process is where they do a DNA analysis and figure out, you know, where these animals are being poached from. And these animals are consumed by people who believe these as factual information. But, you know, if you think about it, I don't believe in God. But, you know, it's very difficult for me to talk to my dad and say, yeah, Dad, God doesn't exist. You know, I can't change someone's beliefs as much as I can't go over to Africa and tell them that these keratinized contraband is no use for the human body. And, you know, because it's been in their tradition for hundreds of years, you know, just like our religion here in America, you know, that's just what they believe. And so our best bet is to, you know, back to what I was saying, is get these people out of poverty and help them so that they're not having the necessity to go off and hunt, you know, the lowland gorilla, the ground pangolin, or, you know, even the dodo bird, which went extinct over in the Mauritius Island, which is just right outside of Madagascar. You know, these animals are, they're not going to be here any longer without, you know, some kind hands to help them get a jump start in life.
Yeah, yep, it is tough, you know. That's what happens with human expansion. Unfortunately, we have deemed it more important than nature. So,
We're such an entitled species. We're disgusting. I hate that's a fact. But I'm just not a fan of humans, for that matter. I absolutely do believe that there needs to be a population control. But as you know, with the government, more people, more money. It's just all, you know, they're capitalizing on us. So, yeah. I'm not one of those like vegans who go off and stand on a corner with a bullhorn. You know, like I'm just doing the best that I can do. I'm just, you know, at the end of the day, when I die, I want to have a good, healthy conscience of my behavior on how I treated people and how I treated the planet. And because, you know, you got Nabisco, you got all these large factories that are just demolishing land and just our natural resources, you know, even like McDonald's with the Amazonian rainforest. There's just some companies that I just completely boycott, and I just want to have zero affiliation. But even as I'm speaking with you, yeah, I do have an iPhone. I do have a Mac, but everything electronically in my house is all refurbished and secondhand, just so that I can still, I'm a human. I can only do so much. I'm an individual with a very small voice that anytime, you know, someone such as you say, like, hey, want to be on this podcast? I'm like, yes, here I can, you know, be on my soapbox and talk about the welfare of these animals and also give a praise to those who deserve it, such as, you know, as I was just mentioning, you know, my friend Sophia Bernstein, who works with the macaques. You know, she probably knows more about that individual specimen or species than anyone else in the world. And, you know, she deserves credit for that. Or even, you know, like the African Penguin Working Group, the Snow Leopard Trust, David Sheldrick's Wildlife Trust. You know, these people are the real heroes on this planet, and they deserve the recognition.
Well, hopefully, I'm not even gonna say hopefully, because I have no hope for the future of our world.
I mean, even I don't even feel that way, Dees. I had a conversation with someone in Africa, and I'm not going to mention who or what, but we were talking about another nonprofit organization of animals, and all they said is, bless their heart, these animals are going to go extinct. You know, whenever you got 10,000 individuals living in the wild, it's just the lower number you get, it's just the more difficult it is. You know, like, for example, here in Houston, we have the Atwater's Prairie Chicken, and I believe we're at 130, 170. I can't recall the exact number, but it's definitely very, very low. And whenever you've got an animal that has a scrape nest, you know, like the killdeer bird or an ostrich, you know, that builds their nest on the ground, you know, you're going to have a lot of dangerous ailments, such as, you know, like ants, or just getting stepped on, or, you know, just housing development, which is why this animal is declined in recent years.
Yeah, well, what do they say? There's more tigers in captivity in Texas alone than there are in the wild.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's crazy times. So
someone just told me that yesterday. When they find out that I'm a zoologist, they go, by the way, did you know that in Texas? I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. So Jacob, I hope you save all the pangolins, and I hope you murder all the house cats. both seem like a tall order. I'll send you a digital copy of Star Wars. Just watch the first three. The other rest of it's shit. So the rest of it's no good.
I don't know. Is it too late in the game? Like, you know, when I try to show people a particular movie, I'm not with it anymore. You know, like, it wasn't with me. It's not nostalgic anymore. Or it's not even, like, Star Wars is just nostalgic. It's not, and, you know, I could tell, you know, as a filmmaker, I could tell you all about the movie. I could tell you about J.J. Abrams' style, the way he approached the new episodes.
Yes, and he said, I'm going to make a terrible film, and he nailed it. 100%. He fucking did it. That fucking wily bastard, he did it.
I love J.J. Abrams. What he did with Cloverfield. And
I'm not hating on J.J. Abrams as a filmmaker as a whole, but his Star Wars entry was horrific. Here's what I'm going to say. It wasn't horrific. It was nothing. It was a zero. It was an incomplete. It was not good. It was not bad. It was a nothing. And nothing is worse than bad because it does not evoke any emotion at all.
You feel nothing. Yeah. 100%.
I would rather.
I get that. Yeah. I just like that he went back to puppetry instead of this bullshit CGI.
Oh, I'm 100% more practical effects is better. That is
so
better.
To me, that's where I'm appraising him. I thought that was really cool that he did that.
I did appreciate that aspect, but the movie otherwise is that there's the story is non-existent. The characterization is non-existent. It's a zero.
I mean, isn't he responsible of Jar Jar Binks, the most hated character?
No, he is not. That was the prequel trilogy that George Lucas wrote and directed.
George Lucas he invented Jar Jar?
Yeah.
Wow.
But George Lucas is also a terrible filmmaker too.
I bet that just killed his career. Well, just it was like right when
just
they
CGI.
See that on his
resume. There was no actor. It was just a CG. George Lucas famously.
The guy who did the voice.
George Lucas was famously on record as saying if he could make all characters CGI in his movies and never work with an actor again, he would. And I'm like, that's the benchmark of a good director, one that doesn't know how to work with actors at all.
AI, right?
Yeah, one that can't handle working with actors. I think that's your job. All right. Well, Jacob, we're going to get out of here for today, but I appreciate you hanging out and telling us about animals and what all that you've done. I'm sure we could go on for hours. If you shout out where people can find you or follow you or anything you want them to, pertinent information.
Thank you for allowing me to do that. First of all, African Pangolin Working Group. Johannesburg Wildlife Vet. You could easily Google them and figure out their social medias as well as mine, Jacob Calle, JACOBCALLE. And I would say my personal account is a ray of science and entertainment and my just personal life, hanging out with my new baby niece, Miss Lainey. Anytime I get to hang out with her is just a pleasure, and I always like to post little videos of her because I just think she's the best.
All right. Guys, follow Jacob, pet a penguin, pangolin, not a penguin, very different animals. Also a penguin, they're fine. That's it. As for me, guys, go to deececomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Come to Upstage Comedy Lounge this Saturday night if you're in San Antonio. And then road dates coming up. Check the website for that. I'll be in North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Kansas, and Oklahoma, and everywhere. Just check it out. And
okay, slow down, Taylor Swift. What do you got,
I gotta pay the mortgage, man. Comedy pays the mortgage and funds the comic book right now. Buy Kill Stan. We've our first print runs flying through. We've got some left. We've got more coming, and that's it, guys. So for the social hour, I've been Deese. For Jacob Kai, thank you very much, and we will see you all next week.